Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the paper session this afternoon. We have two papers. The first one is the variance paper, claim reserving, performance testing in the control cycle. It was written by Yi Ling, Joseph Liebens, and Stephen Lowe. Joseph Liebens is a principal with Towers Perrin, and Yi Ling is a consultant with Towers Perrin. I also just want to direct the attendees to the antitrust information within the on-site brochure. This session is being recorded, so just so you guys know, if you do not want to be recorded, then you understand that you are being recorded. And the second paper we'll talk about is a social science research networking paper called Claim Severities, Claim Relativities, and Age, Evidence from the SOA Group Health Data by Frank Schmid and Chris Laws. So with that, we'll turn it over to Joseph and Yi.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Carl, for the introduction. As Carl mentioned, I'm a principal at Towers Perrin. Our third author, Steve Lowe, gave this the same presentation or a version of this at the CLRS 2 months ago as a general session, and that was followed up by a breakout session such as this concurrent session where Steve and I answered some questions. So if you were at the CLRS, this will be a repeat for you. But you know, we certainly are happy that you're here, and I'm glad you all found your way all the way back here, because I almost got lost trying to find this room. Start things off. Show of hands, how many of you are involved with the claim reserve process, the claim setting process at your companies or for your clients? Okay, which would make sense since you're attending this session. And how many of you use a paid loss development method in your work? Reported or incurred loss development method, Bornheater-Ferguson methods, okay? Well, what this paper is about is the testing of these various methods, the methods that we use in coming up with estimates when we are in the claim reserve, when we're trying to set claim reserves. The process that we've developed or that we're going to talk about will help identify good methods, methods that add value to the estimation process, and maybe methods that aren't so productive for us. And maybe we can eliminate those and save ourselves time, and we can focus our energies on the methods that do provide good estimates, or on developing new methods that will work for us. We'll also talk about a formalized process. Because when you have, let's say you do five different methods when you're estimating liabilities, at some point you're kind of looking at them, weighting them together, maybe just in your head weighting them together, maybe using a formula, 20% of this and 30% of that or whatever. But you know, how do you come up with those weights? And we'll talk about a process that will actually, I'll say, a mathematical answer to that question to provide the best estimate. In our presentation today, I'll start off talking about an issue that actually prompted the writing of this paper. And so I'll first start with that, and then I'll define the problem. I'll talk about the concept of the actuarial control cycle, and in particular, how it applies to the loss reserving process, the outstanding loss estimation process. I'll then turn it over to Yi, who will talk about performance testing and explain what that is a little bit, and how with hindsight, how actuaries can measure their performance when it comes to using the various methods that we use with the process. We'll also present some real life case study, that used data from a client of ours from years ago. And the benefit of the data that we have in this process is that the data was mature. Because the part of what we're going to talk about is hindsight testing, where we're going to be looking at estimates that we made, let's say, 20 years ago using particular methods. And then with hindsight, you know, today looking back saying, well, how good was that estimate? And what could we have done differently, perhaps? Or how did other methods fare in that estimation process? And so that's, we'll show a case study that illustrates that. Now, I mentioned that there was an issue that kind of prompted us to write the paper. And what you see up on the screen here is the description of a quiz or a survey that we did, with about 400 individuals in the insurance industry, most of them actuaries, a lot of senior managers. What we did was asked a series of questions related to the insurance industry, questions such as, what's the commercial lines premium volume for the state of Nebraska? Okay, questions that we as an industry or as individuals, you know, okay, we may not know the answer, but we can probably figure out a way to estimate the answer, you know, in short order. And so we asked a series of questions like that, and then we wanted responses back. Give us a range that you're 90% confident that the right answer is contained in that range. So you could say, you know, using the question I gave about commercial lines premium volume in Nebraska, you might say, well, zero to $100 billion. Okay, yeah, you're going to be right. But that's not what we were trying to get at. You know, give us a range. Is it $100 million to $500 million? And you're 90% sure that you're going to be right. Okay, so we're looking at a 90% confidence interval. And so we asked a number of questions. And what you see on the right-hand side are the raw scores of the responses. And when you ask a question like I did, the expected value is that 90% of the time you're going to be right. And you see here, on average, 30% of the time people gave the right answer. Most of them were right once, twice, or three times. Rarely was anybody right more than six times. And so what it demonstrates is an issue of what we call overconfidence. When we make our estimates, when you estimate the premium volume of commercial lines premium in Nebraska, you feel like, okay, yes, this is the range and I'm 90% sure. But this will tell you 30% of the time you're probably right. So we're a little overconfident in our estimates. When it comes to setting reserves or estimating the claim liabilities, we think that it applies here as well, that we're overconfident in our ability to estimate claim reserves. So the typical reserving process involves using various methods, as we touched on earlier, paid development method, Bornheeder, Ferguson's, whatever. And an actuarial method consists of, we list three different items here. One's an algorithm. The algorithm for the paid loss development method would be take your paid losses as of a certain maturity point in time, multiply it by a loss development factor to project an ultimate value, subtract it from, subtract the paid to date from the ultimate value, the ultimate estimate, and estimate the outstanding liabilities. That's the algorithm. There's a data set. Usually, you know, we like the convenience of loss development triangles. That's a data set, or an example of a data set. And then there's a set of intervention points. And the intervention points are points in the process in which judgments are made by the actuary. And it might be judgments with regard to assumptions. What should the loss development factors be? The period-to-period development factors. Or what should the initial expected loss ratios be? Or there might be overrides to outliers in the data that we just say, okay, this is not, we're not going to include this in our process. You know, the actuary is often asked, how do you know which methods chosen or which methods you use are the most appropriate ones? And similarly, you may be asked, okay, given the different methods, how do you determine the weights between the methods to come up with a final answer? And a lot of times, historically, the answers that actuaries have given have been, well, it's based on my actuarial judgment. You know, I have years of experience in doing this, and so my judgment says, you know, these are the right methods, and this is the right process to go through. And in today's accounting environment and the scrutiny that the industry's been under for a few years now with regards to the reserving process, that kind of answer is not very, it's not very strong. So we need to have some more supporting statements or supporting information as to why we chose different methods and you know, which ones work better and which ones don't. So we think that performance testing via an actuarial control cycle, a formal process, can actually help in improving our ability to estimate outstanding liabilities. And what do we mean by the control cycle? Well, the way I think of the control cycle is it's an endless loop in which we start at the top here where we define a process. Okay, we're going to use three methods to estimate liabilities, and here's how we're going to do it. We define that process. Then we implement that process. We use the three methods, we try this, we try that. At the end of that, we measure the performance. Now, unfortunately, with what we as actuaries, one of the issues that we have is that we can't measure the performance the next day. It's not like forecasting the weather and tomorrow you know whether you were right or wrong. You know, we have sometimes it's a benefit, but I think it's unfortunate that we have to wait a year or 2 years or sometimes 50 years to know were we right or wrong. But we should always try to learn, even if it's only a year later, how well we've done, how well the process we had last year, how well did it perform, the methods, how well did they do. So this actuarial control cycle, again, starts with defining a process, implementing the process, measuring the performance of that process, and then refining or redefining the process so that we improve the process. That's what it's all about, is improving. We need to learn from mistakes, but we need to learn from what we did last year or last quarter or even 5 years ago so we can improve the process going forward. Now, before we jump into the technical aspects of the paper, I wanted to give you the results of the case study for you to have in your mind as Yi goes through the technical aspects. Again, we use real client data, with their permission, of course, and we tested a couple different lines of business. The results here are for one line of business. The paper talks about the one line of business. But these were the key takeaways, and this is kind of information, typical information that you can get from doing this actuarial control cycle and performance testing. The first one here is that you know, even though we tested paid loss development methods and Bornheater-Ferguson's, et cetera, that projecting case reserves was the best method to use for this particular line of business for this client. Not that the others, we'll talk about it, not that the other methods weren't contributing good information, but that, you know, the case reserve projection method was the favored approach. And you will talk about how we determine that. We also decided or came to the conclusion that methods that use claim counts and average severities were ranked very highly. And this is a general statement over all the lines of business we looked at. And the reason for that is the claim counts tend to be very predictable at 12 months or 24 months, or even going into a year if it's a you know, an exposure-based line of business, for example, that has good stable information. But if you're able to estimate the claim counts very accurately, then that takes away a lot of volatility. It puts it all in the severity piece. So rather than mix the two, as some of the other methods might do, now we've separated the two. And so you can, if you can project claim counts, you might as well take advantage of that information. The third takeaway was that methods that took into account changing claim settlement patterns or changes in reserve adequacy, the Berkowitz-Sherman type methods, that those would produce better results. Again, for this specific client, for this line of business, those methods would produce better results than just using a strict Bornheeder-Ferguson or a reported loss development method. So it's identifying changes in the data, which really is what's important here. And then the last key point here, the key takeaway, was that the degree of correlation between the methods was very important when considering how to weight the two methods together and which ones were actually adding value. And what I mean by this is that if two methods give you the same estimate repeatedly, I mean consistently, so they're highly correlated, then why would you do both methods? Because they both give you the same answer all the time. You don't need to. And so it's when methods are uncorrelated that you can, that they mix together better to produce an overall better estimate of the liabilities. And I think with that, I'll turn it over to Yi, who will go through some more of the technical aspects of what's contained in the paper.
Thank you, Joe. As Joe mentioned earlier, performance testing is a formalized process. Oh, sorry. This is not right slide. As Joe mentioned earlier, performance testing is a formalized process. It's not just a numerical exercise. It's a formal analysis of the prediction error. It looks at, tests a particular method by looking at its historical performance, which is to compare the actual unpaid claims liability with the projected unpaid claims liability for a particular method. So how do we quantify the performance of a particular method? In the paper, we propose a statistics called skill as a formal measure of the performance. The skill is calculated as 1 minus the mean square error divided by the mean square anomaly. The mean square error is the average squared difference between the predicted unpaid claim ratios and the actual unpaid claim ratios. The mean square anomaly is the average squared difference between the actual unpaid claim ratios and the long-term average unpaid claim ratios. The skill is very similar, if you're familiar, the R-square in the regression analysis. It is it's a portion of the variance that's being explained by the method. So basically, it gives you, a goodness of fit for the method. As you can see, the higher skill, the better the performance the method has. The skill can be zero if the mean square error equals the mean square anomaly. And if the mean square error is greater than the mean square anomaly, then the skill can be negative. In these cases, one may be just better off using the earned premium multiplied with the long-term average unpaid claims ratio to estimate the unpaid claim liability rather than using the method that's been tested. If the mean square error is zero, then the skill would be one. That's the perfect method we want. Here, I'm just going to show you a numerical example of how the skill is being calculated. Here, we use 20 accident years of data, each evaluated at 42 months. Column four is the projected unpaid claims liability using the paid Chan-Ladd method. And column six is what we call actual unpaid claim liabilities. Both are normalized by earned premium for the variation in the volume of business, so we can calculate the ratio to the earned premium as column 5 and 7. Then the actual anomaly is calculated as the actual unpaid claims ratio, calculated as the difference between the actual unpaid claims ratio and the long-term average unpaid claims ratio, which is shown at the bottom of column 7. And similarly, the predicted anomaly is calculated as the difference between the projected unpaid claims ratio and the long-term average claims ratio. And the difference between column 9 and 10 is what we call prediction error. Or similarly, it's the difference between column 5 and 7, because both are subtracted the long-term average claims ratio. So the mean square anomaly, basically we take each cell in column 9 and square it and then sum it and then take the average. That gives you the mean square anomaly of 0.157%. And then the mean square error, we basically take every cell in column 11 and take the square and sum all the years and then take the average. So it gives you 0.1249%. And then the skew, as we mentioned or the previous slide, is calculated as 1 minus the mean square error divided by the mean square anomaly, which gives you 21% for the paid chain ladder method at 42 months. As Joe mentioned earlier, sometimes we want to combine methods to hope to get a better estimate. So how do we determine what weights we're going to give to those methods so that the combined methods can give you a better estimate? Here we define the optimal weights to give to those methods are those that can minimize the variance of the weighted method. The variance of the weighted methods depends on three things. First, the weights that's being given to the methods. And then second, the variance of each method. And third, the covariance between those methods. To minimize the variance of the weighted method, we can simply just take the derivative of the variance of the weighted method with respect to the weights, and then set it equal to zero. And now you can solve for the weight. If the two methods are totally uncorrelated, which means the covariance is zero, and then if also the two methods have the same variance, then basically we can just give same weight to each method so that the variance of the weighted methods will be the minimum. And if one method has lower variance than the other, intuitively we'll give more weight to the method with lower variance. This slide here gives you a formula to calculate the weights given to two methods. But if we want to combine more than two methods, we can simply just use in solver in Excel and solve the weight for each method. The chart in this slide provides more insights into the relationship between the two variances and the correlation. Each line or curve in the slide represent a given correlation, with the top one being the correlation, the two methods are perfectly positively correlated. And at the bottom one, the two methods are perfectly negative correlated. As you can see, if the two methods are perfectly positive correlated, the minimum variance can be achieved by giving 100% weight to the method with the lower variance, which is the very right point there. And as the correlation decreases, which shifts, the minimum variance shift towards the left. So at the very extreme event, as you can see, is the bottom curve there. The variance of the weighted method can be zero if the two methods are perfectly negatively correlated. So basically, one method offsets the other method, the total variance will be just zero. And that's the best method, we think. Next, I'm just going to show you some results we did in the case study. As Joe mentioned earlier, this case study is based on a client of us. We used about 26 years of data. We tested five methods, as you can see from the table here. Paid chain ladder, reported chain ladder, case reserve development, reported count chain ladder, and case reserve adequacy adjustment method. As Joe mentioned earlier, because we can project report count with more accuracy, the skill for the report count method is very high, it's 99%, and the paid method doesn't really perform as well as the other methods, it's kind of low here. It's only 23% at 42 months, and the overall skill is only 13%. And also, as you can see, the two basic chain ladder methods didn't give you very good skill here, that's because the company has been through some case reserve strengthening during the period of time when we tested. And so you can see the bottom method, which is the case reserve adjustment method, also Broca's Sherman method, gives you a higher skill, about 52%. So that's basically the takeaway from the case study. You can tell, you know, using the skill, we can tell which method performs better, which method performs worse. And also the skill varies by maturity. So at each maturity, as you can see from the chart here, at each maturity, the skill would be different. With the top one, that's the reported count projection method. It gives you a very high skill. And then the pink one is the paid chain ladder method. It's quite low here and even has some negative values, which we didn't show in the chart, in both the earlier and later maturities. In the early maturities, we think the paid method gives you negative skill is because the size of the lost event factors is so large, so the projection of the liability becomes so volatile. And at later maturities, the paid method also gives you negative skill is because at later age, the unpaid claim liability estimate is really dependent on the number and the nature of the claims that remain to be settled. So the volume of the cumulative paid claims is not just a good indicator of how the remaining unpaid liabilities would be. Also, this because the skill varies by maturity, this suggests that we should use different methods at different maturity. In this case study, we also look at as Joe mentioned, the correlation is an important consideration when we combine methods. If you look at the correlation matrix at the bottom there, a lot of methods are very highly correlated. And this suggests there might be an underlying systematic error that affect all the methods. And also, the reported count method is not that highly correlated with the other methods, as you can see across the first line there. And this suggests that the frequency severity method might be a good method. And also, if you look at the reported loss and case reserve projections, they are pretty high correlated. Reported loss and case reserve, the correlation is about 98%, which means when you combine the methods, you probably don't want to combine these two because it doesn't bring any value. Lastly, let's just look at some reasons why we do performance testing, which Joe has, some of them Joe has mentioned earlier. First, it gives us, improve the accuracy of the estimates, and also give actuaries some formal rationale for selecting what actuary methods to be used for estimating the liabilities. And also the performance testing can be used to look at the reserve ranges. As you mentioned earlier, actuaries tend to be overconfident when they try to estimate something. So the performance testing can help manage the overconfidence. And performance testing can also be used to evaluate the cost and benefits of enhancing the data and systems used by a company. And lastly, performance testing can give some support to Solvency II and economic capital, especially when we look at some stochastic reserve risk models. Performance testing can be used as a validation to the other models. So that completes our presentation for the paper on performance testing. We take questions later or now? Okay.